Welcome, everybody. This is Jonathan Gustin, and this is the Purpose Discovery Program. And this module is the first of three modules about the soul quest. This one is mostly about preparation and some about the threshold ceremony out on the land. The second of the three modules on the soul quest will be entirely about the threshold ceremony, the day out on the land. And then the final of the three modules on the soul quest will be about incorporation. So before we begin, I invite you to close your eyes and feel your feet firmly planted on the ground. Feel the aliveness in your feet, the contact with the floor. And know in your bones that this floor is connected to the ground, to the earth. And that this earth is your home. That you belong here. And this earth doesn't merely feed you and breathe you and give you life, but it's also the primary place one experiences their spiritual life. Not that there isn't great efficacy to going to a monastery or a meditation retreat, etc. You are naturally, indigenously connected to the earth. You needn't identify as an indigenous person, although of course you are. You are native to this planet. So let's begin. Why go on a soul quest? If you want, you can follow along on the handout. I'll be riffing off of it. So why would you want to leave the comfort and security of your home to go into wild nature to explore your soul's purpose? Why go outside? Well, the Buddha and Jesus and Muhammad and Moses, they didn't seek the vision for their lives and the vision for their people in the safety of shelters. The Buddha awakened under a tree in the wilderness, and Jesus went to the desert and returned, ready to take up the challenges of his life's work. Muhammad was fasting and praying in a natural cave when the Quran came to him, and Moses went to the top of a mountain to bring back a vision to his people. And you might be thinking, well, that's well and fine for the Buddha and Moses and Muhammad and so forth. But I'd suggest that at the very least, you consider this, that people from all times and all places have gone out into the wilderness to seek direction, to seek calling, to meet their destiny. So I'm going to read a few quotes from a couple of books. One's The Trail to the Sacred Mountain by Stephen Foster and Meredith Little, and the other is Soulcraft by Bill Plotkin. At some point in your life, you began to wonder if, perhaps, there is more to life than another round of success or failure at the standard game of security building. You may begin to wonder, what is at the core of me? How can I have a more soul-rooted identity? Your individual soul is the core of your human nature, the reason for which you were born, the essence of your specific life purpose. By soul, I mean the vital, mysterious, and wild core of you. People have received profound insight about themselves and their world by means of a quest, whose basic universal elements include 1. A remote wilderness setting. So this isn't just about going into your backyard or the local park. This is about getting out there, into the wilderness, away from humans and the productions of humans, concrete and buildings and roads and so forth. The second is fasting from food. So not only are you fasting from human beings and their productions, but you're fasting from taking in nourishment. And the third is solitude. You're fasting from being with other people. In this case, by people, I mean human people, not all the other types. So, a remote wilderness setting, fasting from food and solitude. All right, three more parts. Direct exposure to the forms and forces of nature. So you're not crawling into a tent and hiding out there in the wilderness. You are out there and you are experiencing the wind and the sun and the temperature and all of it. You are making yourself porous. You're making yourself available. You're making yourself open to being occupied by wild nature. The fifth is attention focusing and consciousness shifting ceremonies, prayers, and practices. So you're not just sitting there idly. You will be praying. You will be engaging in multiple practices and ceremonies of your own making to help make you more prone to soul encounter. And the sixth factor is a significant period of time. Traditionally, the vision quest ceremony, of which the soul quest is a distilled version, is a 4-day and night ceremony. For this soul quest, we ask that folks do at least 8 hours out in the wild, preferably on a Saturday, and then take Sunday as a day alone, partially outside and perhaps partially inside. And of course, you can extend this longer if you wish, but you would need to have some significant skills in the outdoors to have that margin of safety that is important. So to enact a soul quest is actually to clear a space. The quest is to honor a fallow time in our spiritual lives, an emptiness into which something utterly new and generative might emerge. It's to create an open vessel capable of being filled to overflowing by the mystery, by soul, by the sacred other. Soul encounter can be brought about by many methods. In a PGI, we have different methods, Jungian journaling, for instance, active imagination, writing with a pen and paper. But wilderness-based fasting rites are among the most effective. As a rite of initiation, the quest is a ceremonial descent to find our soul image, our mythopoetic identity, and derive greater clarity regarding the purpose and meaning of our life. Now, this initiation is not into any social or religious or spiritual group, but into your own soul path and deeper levels of authentic adulthood. The primary goal of the quest is to empower you to commune with your soul and discover that soul is reflected back to you through nature, revealed through your senses, your emotions, and your deep imagination. There is consciousness, and you are inside of consciousness. I know it sometimes seems the other way around, that consciousness is an emergent property of human beings and our brains. But try reversing it. Your body, your brain, your life is happening in consciousness. All objects, including you, the very substance of which are made of and known by awareness itself. In that awareness, in that consciousness, there is an intelligence beyond mere discursive thinking. And that intelligence can be reflected back to you through deep imagination and the wilderness itself. Unless you reach the center of your longing, you will not be able to stay focused during your fast, to pray long enough and deeply enough to offer your attention reverently to the animals and signs and images and dreams that appear. To open the door to vision, you must surrender fully to your deepest yearning. This is key. If you were to forget everything else, remember this. Let the longing do the work. Let the yearning to live from wholeness do the work. Give your attention to your deepest driving desire. We have many deep desires. We want to have fun. We want to be loved. We want to be safe. We want to be liked and esteemed. We want to belong. We want to thrive. Okay, good. But when those are satisfied or partially satisfied, we have an opportunity to turn our attention to an even deeper driving desire. To know ourselves spiritually, not just as pure being and unbounded, undivided awareness, but in our own uniqueness, not at the ego level, but at the soul level, to know our soul print, our face, our true face. What are we meant to do? Who are we meant to blossom and flower into at the level of soul? There's a word in one of the Native American languages, Humblicacha, Humblicacha. I might be mispronouncing it. And when European anthropologists came and they studied this ceremony, they translated it as vision quest, which wasn't a bad translation because it is a quest for a vision of your soul's deep purpose. But the literal translation of Humblicacha is the lament or lamenting. It's the process or activity or experience of crying for your vision. Perhaps that sounds, you know, histrionic to a Western ear, going out and just weeping. But open yourself to it for a moment. Open yourself to the ache, the thirst, to not leave life unlived. And what I invite you to do is to sink all the way to the bottom of this ache, of this lament, of this cry. And you'll be spending the first hour, but really the whole ceremony, but the first hour letting yourself touch that cry. It's a unique ceremony. It's not like a wedding ceremony or a bar mitzvah ceremony or a baptism or any number of other wonderful ceremonies. It's a ceremony of descent, both in the underworld, that is to say the imaginal realm, but a descent into your deepest driving desire. All right, so we're going to segue into the preparation phase. So you've got to take the ceremony seriously if you expect it to take you seriously. So allow the ceremony to become personified, to become a person, that you are having a relationship with the ceremony. When I took lay ordination in the Zen tradition, we had to sew this little rakusu, like a little Zen bib, kind of a little Buddhist robe. And it took forever because I was not good at needlepoint. And we had to do a little mantra for each and every stitch. And we were asked to stitch our intention into the robe in preparation for the ceremony. That by the time we got to the ceremony, it would almost be like, oh, yep, ceremony. So the preparation phase is incredibly important. It's absolutely important. So here are the assignments. There's a bunch of them. The first one is a guided meditation called the 10 years process. So just follow the recording. I won't say more about that here. Now the second one is reaching out to friends. So choose a few friends, at least four, preferably different people from your soul circle, although you could include them and then have eight answers. And you're telling them why you are performing this self-design day-long soul quest ceremony. And then you're asking them for candid opinions or feedback to the following questions. How do I hold back giving my gifts? How do I not love or show up for myself? What is the greatest gift I can offer the world? What do you want me to give fully to life? So just receive the feedback in writing, right? Don't get into a give or take. It's okay to ask for clarification, but don't get into, giving explanations or justifications to your people. And look for the commonalities in the answers that you receive. So that's the second assignment. Now the third is called Why Quest Now? So consider these three questions. Why is this the right time in your life to seek an encounter with your soul? I mean, in some ways, it's a trick question. When could there possibly be a wrong time to seek the wisdom of soul? But it's now. And you're planning to do this within weeks or months of listening to this recording. And you're this particular age, you're not younger or older, so ask this question: what about my life and my inquiry into what life is and where I belong makes this the right time to engage in soul discovery? And the second question is, what phase of my life is coming to an end? And the third question is, what new phase of life is in the process of being born? So take time and meditate on each of these questions. Don't just sit there and think. Thinking's fine. You can do some if you want to. But really let your body, your intuition, lead the way. What's being outgrown and what wants to emerge? And so it's a listening, not a thinking. What wants to blossom in me? If I were to think about it, I'd think of a, a beautiful and fragrant flower. I'd think of a rose. But what if that's not the flower I'm destined to be? So then the question becomes, what wants to bloom? What is the color? What is the energy? What is the emanation, the luminescence of this particular body-mind's gift to the world? Now, it's not just about opening up to what's next. It's also about relinquishing what no longer serves us. So an analogy or a metaphor I use a lot is, imagine you're a caterpillar. And what do you want to bring into the cocoon? All right, so do I want to bring my video game addiction and my iPad into the cocoon of transformation? No. How about my Netflix addiction? No. And on and on. Yeah? So there's a relinquishing. What isn't serving me? So there's a few categories. I'm going to go through them. The first is, what relationships or friends get in the way of my exploring my deep nature? There are some friends or relatives who've been in your life a long time. And I'm not suggesting you just willy-nilly throw people under the bus and part company. But I'm also not suggesting that you don't do so. There are relationships which you may well have already outgrown, but for some reason they've stuck around. It's hard. It can make you feel disloyal. It can make you feel exposed to relinquish relationships which you have outgrown. It's not saying that you're better or more developed or more mature. I mean, you might be, but that's not the main point. It's saying that they no longer serve you. Who are the friends for which the conversations just are flat? So consider saying goodbye to some of these friendships. I don't mean literally calling them and saying, bye, I'm not going to talk to you again. But consider taking a sabbatical from them. And then after a time, see if you actually feel drawn to continue them. So next are activities. What gets in the way of exploring my deepest nature? So we're dealing here with addiction and security. Because even if we don't feel nourished by certain friendships, they do provide us at least a semblance of security. Perhaps it's just the illusion of security, but... And to relinquish these, whether they're friendships or activities, exposes us. And that's the point. We are preparing for the quest by molting, by shedding skins, so that we can enter into the cocoon of transformation and allow ourselves to completely liquefy. So what activities get in the way? What do you do that is maybe not the most wholesome thing? And I'm not suggesting that, if you watch Netflix once in a great while, that that's some massive problem. But, if you're like me and I check my email, sometimes there's times when I do it obsessively, like every hour. So what's that about, right? It kind of binds anxiety. Like, what if someone's trying to reach me? And we do this a lot. This is a concept from psychology, very basic. We bind our anxiety by doing certain activities. I notice one way I bind anxiety is I keep planning. It'll be somewhere in my day, even if it's just the weekend, and then I'll think, okay, well, what's going to happen next? And then after that. So there's a part of me that thinks that if I know how the day is going to unfold, I'll be safer. So maybe this is one way you bind anxiety. Maybe it's not. But ask yourself, how do I bind anxiety? Eating too much ice cream? Watching too much TV? Reading too much gossip columns? All right, the third is roles. What roles get in the way of exploring your deepest nature? Are you the one that always rescues? Are you the one that always problem solves? Think of all the roles you play. And notice in the next week the different roles you play. Now, some roles are non-negotiable. If you're a parent, you can't stop being a parent. Don't do it. But there are very few roles like that. And there are roles even within relationships. So if you're in a partnership, or you're even just in a flat and you have a roommate, what's the role that you've either been cast as, or you've cast yourself, or you've all co-cast you as? And what would it be like to take a sabbatical? Now, it will destabilize the homeostasis of the relationship, of the household. Good. I'm asking you to destabilize these, not your relationship with your kids. And what I mean here is, if I were to destabilize my marriage, I don't mean by going out and, you know, having sex with multiple partners. That would certainly do the trick. No. How do I show up in the relationship, in my marriage, in a way that keeps me stuck, that keeps me in version Jonathan 1.0, or with my colleagues, or with my teachers, or with my students, or, you know, and so forth? That's a great question. All right, the fourth is possessions. What possessions get in the way of exploring your deepest nature? Here in the United States, a middle-class lifestyle tends to attract a lot of stuff. You may not even think of yourself as sort of a materialistic person, but, you know, unless you're doing hard farm work, you're actually not wearing out your shirts very quickly. And before you know it, you have a closet with 20, 30, 40 shirts and only one torso. If you looked in my closet, you'd think I was Imelda Marcos with a billion shoes. Why so many shoes? I only have 2 feet. Right, so there's this accretion, this accumulation of stuff. Consider doing some cleaning out. Selling or bringing some of this stuff to Goodwill or Salvation Army or somewhere where people can really use this stuff. Here's a great quote from Bill Plotkin. What's involved is both a surrender of and a surrender to. First, a surrender of your beliefs about how you were supposed to be and how the world was supposed to work. And a surrender of the relationships and activities and roles and possessions. And then, after saying goodbye, then it's surrendering to your deepest and wildest passions. So ask yourself, what beliefs about how I was supposed to be and how the world was supposed to work do I need to surrender? What a great question. And then the next question, what deep and wild passions, buried as they might be, do I need to surrender to? This is scary. Your deepest and wildest passions, which you may have kept partially under wraps, because you didn't want to rock the boat, the homeostasis of your life. Okay. Next piece. So you want to reduce or eliminate some of the following: TV, sugar, junk food, alcohol. I'll just stop there. I love all these things. I like TV, I like sugar, I like junk food, I like alcohol. So this isn't to say you're bad or wrong for doing any of this stuff, right? I mean, if you're, drinking a ton, yeah, that's actually bad for your health and your liver and so forth. Drugs, gossiping, heavy, heavy meals, online addictions such as checking your email or your texts, your Facebook, your web surfing, constantly checking your phone, pornography, YouTube, Netflix, the news, and on it goes. Lying, workaholism, caffeine, and all sorts of other addictions. What are you addicted to? Again, I'm not saying that your cup of tea is some great big problem. But it's a stimulant, it's a drug, and notice what happens when you even contemplate the idea of taking a few days off from coffee or tea. Does a voice come up in you and go, "No way"? All right, so this brings us to fasting and diet purification. So letting go of old patterns of eating helps us to let go of old habits of living. So fasting is a part of probably every religious tradition that I'm aware of. So this isn't some, newfangled thing, right? So to help us make room for what is alive, we actually take a break from food. I don't believe a caterpillar brings food into the cocoon of transformation. Right? So as you prepare, what's the breakfast you would eat if you were about to get married? Would you eat two chocolate glazed donuts? Maybe you would. Or would you eat a healthy breakfast? Me, I'd eat a healthy breakfast because I want to feel tip top for this ceremony, marriage ceremony. So same thing here. As you're approaching this day, which is in many ways a deeper and more important ceremony, right? Not to diminish a marriage ceremony, than anything else you've ever done, because it's a commitment to soul. So, several weeks before your quest, consider reducing and then eliminating all sorts of junk. You can read the stuff in the handout. So let's say your average diet is like a C or C plus. You want to change it into an A. And then just before the quest, 6 days or so, consider relinquishing even more kind of junky things. Maybe just try eating only organic foods. Maybe just raw foods. But you know your body and what you need. But there's a lot of stuff you're eating that you probably don't need. That's not so great for you. All right, then a few days before the quest, consider going on a diet that's just very easily digestible. I personally do like a raw juice diet for several days before a quest. Now you'll have to figure out whether that's a healthy choice for you, but it may well be. So the intention here is to do a complete cleansing of your body, and it's your decision how you decide to approach it. Because you're not doing a full 4 days and four nights, or you're likely not doing that, and just an 8-hour ceremony, then this attention to the food dimension becomes even more important, because it constantly reminds you of the ceremony that you're taking step by step into, right? Oh yeah, I'm not gonna eat that donut. Oh yeah, I'm not gonna eat those potato chips. Okay, so the next part is your equipment list. So a few thoughts. On the one hand, you're going out into the wilderness, so you're going to need some things, some items to make sure you're safe. So for instance, an emergency whistle. Let's say you're out in the woods and you twist an ankle, and you're going to want an emergency whistle so you can attract human help to you so you can get out safely. And you just do 3 blasts. On the other hand, if you're going out for just one day, then you're not going to need a ton of stuff. So here's the main things I want you to be aware of. One is keeping yourself warm. So if you're doing this and it's cool or even cold out, that's doable. But you want to have long underwear and warm socks and boots and hat and mitts and gloves and scarf and neck warmer. You want a sit pad, something that you can sit on that will insulate you from the ground. You can lose a lot of heat just from the cold ground. You may want to bring a compact sleeping bag. Not to go to sleep, but to get inside of, cinch the cinch strap, and high likelihood that with all of that, you'll be warm. If you're still not warm, get out of that sleeping bag and do 50 jumping jacks, and you will warm up. I did this when I was sleeping in an igloo for 10 days, and it worked. All right, so moving and lots and lots of warm clothes. Don't underestimate how cold you can get by sitting outdoors in a windy environment and not eating, right? So you will want that insulation. You will want all those hats and all that stuff. And you will want a sleeping bag, and you will want to sometimes move to keep yourself warm. If you're in a really cold and snowy environment, then you probably want to be always like a quarter mile, you know, 10, 15 minutes away from your vehicle, so that in an emergency, if you feel there's even a slight chance that you're going to go hypothermic, go back to your car, turn on the heat, right? Take good care of yourself. You are responsible for yourself out there. But again, this isn't like you're going out there for days and days and nights. It's, you know, 8 hours or so. If it's hot out, of course, you know, wear a sun hat, sunscreen. You can bring an umbrella. You can sit under trees. You can have a tarp and so forth. So take a look at the equipment list and begin gathering your equipment. You don't have to buy a lot of stuff. You can borrow a whole bunch of this stuff from people. Please do not burn candles. Don't light tiny fires of any kind in tin cans or making campfires. People can dramatically underestimate the dangers of fires running out of control. And this happens all over the place. So it's PGI's policy that we do not use fires during our soul quest. If you want, and you have a fireplace or something at home, you can write little slips of paper out there on your quest during the threshold period, and then you can burn them when you get back in the safety of your home. So leave behind your lighters and food and your art supplies other than a pen and paper. Leave behind the entheogens, psychedelics, and recorded music, because we want you to go as nakedly as possible for this rebirth ceremony. We want you to bring as little as possible from your regular, ordinary lives into your circle. I want you to relinquish your old ways of doing things so that you feel liberated, you feel different. If you were to do a soul quest on your couch, that probably wouldn't work as well. I'm not saying it couldn't work, but you get the feeling here, right? Your couch is the place where you kind of just crash and go dark and, you know, play on your phone or whatever it is that you do, read a book. Yeah. So here we're getting away from what you already know about yourself. And you're standing at the threshold of what you don't know about yourself. This is what all of this is meant for. How do you come to know that which you don't know? How do you bring that which is unconscious into consciousness? How do you bring that which is in the darkness and bring it into the light? Well, you travel into the darkness, the fertile darkness, until you have dark adjusted eyes. But you don't bring your couch with you. So. A little bit about the ceremony. So the first part is, there's five parts. The first part is the preparation. And this can be weeks or months. And that's what I've been discussing this whole time. And then you'll go out onto the land and you will cross a threshold. This is part two. You'll pick two objects, or rather they will pick you, natural objects. So let's say like in the soul walk, that you allow two trees that are pretty close to each other to choose you. Tell them out loud what you're doing. Ask for their support. Tell them a little bit about your story. Come into relationship with your natural surroundings by introducing yourself to a few of the people. And here I'm using the word people as broadly as possible. And you may feel silly talking to trees, but you may feel something kind of very old inside of you that resonates with this practice. And when you feel the call, you cross the threshold. So as whereas the preparation can take weeks or months and you really want to give yourself to it, this crossing of the threshold is like 10 minutes. And when you cross that threshold, you are a ghost from the middle world and you are now in the underworld journey. And you'll allow a place known as a sit spot to call you. This is the place where you will take your stand for your life. You will sit there for 8 hours or more, praying, praying, and praying. And I'll go into what you do during those 8 hours in just a moment. The fourth part is recrossing the threshold, another 10 minutes or so. And then finally, the incorporation phase, which is a year. So, a sacred ceremony provides a container for your commitment, and it has a kind of a progression to it. So I wrote it out with these five stages. So we begin with a kind of, I would call it a salutation. We cross the threshold. We're kind of warming ourselves up. It's a calling to our heart, body, mind, and soul. Right? We allow the sit spot to call to us, and we ritually create a purpose circle, and we make an offering, right? In some traditions, it's an offering of tobacco, but you can offer a song or poetry or simply praise everything you see around you. You see that weed or that ant or that butterfly, that bird or that tree, the sky, the earth, praising is a beautiful practice. So, and get out of your mind. How do you do that? Do something interesting like sing, chant, rattle, silent meditation. All right, so that's part one, the salutation, the crossing, the threshold. The second part I call engagement. This is where the intensity of your quest begins to build, and you start swimming towards the deep end of the pool. So call in your allies. Call in Entelechy. Call in your ancestors. Evolution itself, the wild earth, the cosmic power of the universe. State your wish. Dear soul, I wish to receive my deepest calling. I wish to receive the images and symbols, sensations, understandings, insight, wisdom about this next stage of my life. I am your humble servant. I am bowing prostrated on the ground, begging, asking, beseeching you to offer me a path forward to a more deeply soul-centered life. Tell your story. Talk out loud. Tell the story of your deep ache and longing to live your purpose. Consider doing a belief removal ceremony. Address the ways that your fears and resistance and reservations have gotten in the way of your hearing your soul's calling. One by one, describe each fear in detail, but do it out loud. And then, only if it's true for you, commit to releasing this impediment from your life. So if I were going out, this is less true now, but probably because it worked, I relinquished this sensitivity. I named it a funny name. What did I call it? Hyper oversensitivity, thin skin disorder, rejectionophobia. So that was the fun diagnosis I gave myself. And I prayed to be rid of it. And to a large extent, not totally, sometimes our prayers are partially answered, it was removed. You're asking for a deep clean. So that's the belief removal ceremony. And whenever you don't know how to do something, right? Because I could do a talk, an hour talk on that as a clinician and other things. And this recording would be even longer than it is. But I want to keep it to an hour. So ask soul. Ask soul. When in doubt, ask your intuition. Do some journaling. Write about the stage of your life that is ending. Then take a pause, take a break. Then write about what you most deeply ache for. And this one is important. Compose a personal myth. Again, part of you might go, wait a minute, how do I do that? You've watched Star Wars, you've watched Lord of the Rings, at least I hope you have, right? You know how these things go. You've watched a Marvel movie. What's going on there? What's your version? What dragon do you have to slay or have you slayed? And what's the next one? All right, the third of the five stages of this 8-hour quest, activation. You are near or at your limit. The intensity of your prayer is getting stronger. And you're in the deep end of the pool now. And there are many strokes, soul encounter technologies to choose from. So here we go. Nature movements. Break some twigs, pile some stones, tie some string, bury a rock, take all your clothes off, and be naked as the day you were born. If there's a river nearby, just dunk yourself in it. I took this sort of, you know, baptism mikveh ceremony. It was just freezing cold. It was painful, but beautiful. Smash a rock. Align yourself with something. Do some ecstatic trance dance. Yeah? Poetry. Sing. Rattle. Drum. Chant. You can play drums on your chest. Just beat. 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 Inside, relinquish your name. See if another name comes. Just be in silence and listen. Do some journaling, storytelling. Observe the natural world. Perform the Death Lodge ceremony. Briefly, you can invite the energy of certain people to come and visit you. When I first did this many years ago, I was still attached to old girlfriends. I'm still attached to them, but I was attached to them in an unwholesome way. And I needed to say goodbye. I needed to forgive them where they needed forgiving, and I needed to ask them for forgiveness where I needed forgiving. And friends and relatives, they all lined up. It was really, really extraordinary. So see if anyone wants to come to your death lodge and say goodbye before version 1.0 of you is composted. All right, stage 4, the crucible. You've been swimming in the deep end for hours. It's now time to dive where the pressure is greatest. All right, so it's one thing to swim on the surface. It's another to now take a deep dive. Right, this is a little scary. There's no oxygen under there. There's a lot of pounds per square inch down there. Right, so this is a time of absolute focus and total effort. And the intensity of your prayer is very strong. Cry, scream, whisper your prayer to soul, beseech, beg for a vision of your life. Don't hold back. Pray like your life depends on it, because it does. You can rattle your prayer, dance your prayer. And now, all this effort, all this intensity is just half of it, right? The other part is grace, letting go of effort. So you'll have to listen. It's not just about pure, just sitting there in a complete kind of Buddhistic, moment and openness. I do highly suggest that you have extended moments of yin, openness and receptivity, and extended moments of yang, powerful, assertive prayer. And finally, in the end, you just let go completely. You exhaust yourself and collapse. And be open. You don't know in what way grace will bless you. This is very important. If you have a preconceived notion of what a successful quest looks like, you will have an elevated chance of missing what you've been given. And then finally is the recrossing of the threshold. And eat a little before you get into your vehicle. I want you to be grounded. I don't want you to get into a car accident because your blood sugar is, really down. You want to be very careful. All right, so take some time to reground yourself. Take some time in your vehicle to fill out the Soul Quest Incorporation worksheet. It's in that 11-page handout, right? So symbols or images I received during my quest, jot that down. Plants, animals, elements that spoke to me during my quest, write that down, and all of the rest. So that's the preparation stage of the quest. So I'll talk more about some of the actual things you'll do on the quest in another module, but I needed to tell you early on what the quest would actually look like so that your thinking mind would have something to hold on to. But here's an important thing. It's a self-design ceremony. Ultimately, you're going to choose the way you create your soul quest. It will have some elements like fasting, for sure, I mean, if you have hypoglycemia or, some sort of diabetes or whatever, talk to your doctor and, take out some things in a safe way. But you'll be fasting from food, in all likelihood, definitely fasting from people, comfort. But you'll also be allowing yourself to plan and also be spontaneous with creating elements of your own quest. I was surprised. I'm not much of a dancer, and I did some kind of archaic dance. I grabbed this piece of wood and, where there was no one looking, and I just danced inside of my circle. And it was a dance I'd never seen myself do before. So allow yourself to do this. I got naked. I'm not a guy who hangs out at the nude beaches. Nothing wrong with that, but I just don't. And I was just like, yeah, I need to take off all my clothes. And so there was a period of time where I was making the prayer naked. And I've got to say, it's nothing like I've ever done before, or I had ever done before. Right? Being out, fasting, praying naked in the elements, it got my attention. So you're trying to get your own attention, right? Your attention, soul's attention. All right, well, there's much more to say, but we're up to our hour. So thank you for your attention. Don't worry about all these moving parts. You can't do the soul quest wrong. You can't. Okay, I suppose you could. You could bring your iPhone out and play video games. But you know what I mean. It's just not possible. If you're sincere and you pray, it'll go well for you. All right. Thank you.